indie media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly, without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media. There are now almost 100 indie media websites or IMCs worldwide, providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns, and protests. The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests that shut down the World Trade Organization summit. Uncensored and unsponsored, indie media sites can be updated literally anytime, anywhere, and by anyone. The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues, and at the same time, connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from those global websites and the UK's very own indie media site. For more information, or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk. Welcome! Coming up today, we have all the latest news from the UK and global newswires.
And from Palestine and from all around the world, we have all kinds of reports. And
also featuring a world premiere of the poetry of D.H. Rumsfeld throughout the show. Mm. So that's going to be a cultural highlight.
Interesting.
As well as news from Russia.
Absolutely.
Germany, St. Louis.
Lots from Palestine. It's been crazy out there.
Yeah. And so now we're going to a very strange track, which in no way is completely the opinions of everyone on this show, but it's quite a mad track, and it's by, I think it's a band called Against Mel B. And it's quite a crazy track, and I've never heard anything like it before.
Mel B.
Okay, now some UK news. In September this year, the WTO meets in Mexico to continue its relentless campaign to turn everything we need to survive into profit for the already rich and death for those who can't pay. Globalisation is not simply about trade in what should feed us, it's about trade in what kills us. This is a report from the DICEY group. At the same time, the London's impoverished Canning Town is reluctant host to the Defence Systems Equipment International, DICEY, at the Excel Centre. This is the largest European arms fair of 2003. At the last DICEY in 2001, there were 664 exhibitors and delegates were invited from 68 countries to buy guns, bombs, military planes, small arms, mines, tanks, and lots else that help governments to slaughter their own and neighbouring populations. Disarm DICEY is coordinating a week-long festival of action, protest and resistance aimed at the arms fair, the companies that exhibit there, the buyers and the governments that pay for the whole show. The DICEY coordinating group are calling on all, whatever their reasons, who oppose this obscene market of murder to come to London and use whatever methods of protest and tactics of action they believe most effective. Plans so far, major events during the week of the fair are a march, a day of non-violent civil disobedience and a day of no guidelines direct action. Numerous other events both at Excel and offices are taking shape. Different groups are already taking action before the markets even open and are calling on people to focus on the death merchants and their offices, factories and military bases. Disarm DICEY is a network of groups ranging across the spectrum from Quakers to Black Bloc, working for a coordinating committee to create a week where diverse groups can use whatever methods and tactics they choose, respecting the rights of others to do the same and respecting the spaces they do it in. Okay, a list of companies contributing to the actual DICEY event can be found on the official website www.dicey.co. Supporting groups against DICEY in no particular order include Campaign Against the Arms Trade, Youth and Student CND, SOAS, People and Planet, SOAS Stop the War, Global Women's Strike, Rhythms of Resistance, Wombles, Revo, Disobedience, CND, Women in Black, Anarchist Youth Network, Hackney Refugee and Migrant Support Group, DT, Carnivalistas, Destroy DICEY, Anarchist Federation, and Surrey Anarchist Group. And Andrew.
That's DICEY is spelled D-S-E-I, just so people know. On the 16th of May, last Friday, George Galway spoke at Oxford Town Hall at an event organised by Oxford University Students Stop the War. Reports have been circulating both on local anti-war email lists and in the local press that Galloway had been banned from speaking by the council. These reports proved to be untrue and the event went on as planned. Despite the confusion, around 130 people attended, including 10 members of Oxford University Conservative Association, who had apparently coordinated their first ever protest against Galloway with the Daily Telegraph. The Telegraph is responsible for making allegations that Galloway had links with Saddam Hussein's regime and they received funds from the regime amounting to something in the region of $15 million. The documents used as proof of Galloway's involvement with the Ba'athist regime have since been checked by independent experts and deemed crude forgeries. Galloway has since launched legal proceedings against the Telegraph, on whose board of directors he told the audience...
Include
Richard Pearl, Margaret Thatcher and Henry Kissinger. Galloway spoke initially about some of the other local difficulties he has had since becoming heavily involved with the anti-war movement. Most recently he has been expelled from the Labour Party over the allegations made by the Telegraph. Petitions circulated during the meeting demanded that he be reinstated. Galloway is also facing a private prosecution for treason launched by the Attorney General, Lord Goldsmith, who contested the view of the anti-war movement that the war was illegal. Treason, until 1998, was still a capital offence in this country, but since then it has carried a maximum penalty of life, imprisonment. Galloway informed the audience that this private prosecution is being financed by Rupert Murdoch, owner of the Sun newspaper.
What a surprise. What a guy.
After discussing some of the issues surrounding the Telegraph's allegations against him, Galloway turned to the effects of the disastrous
effects of the UN sanctions after the first Gulf War, the latest Gulf War itself, the anti-war movement and the internal affairs of the Labour Party. He said that our personal, economic and cultural freedoms have been grievously compromised by the war as the Foreign Office issues more and more warnings about the safety of travel to Arab countries. He ended on a more positive note by suggesting that Tony Blair's time at the top of the Labour Party may soon draw to a close. The cracks are already beginning to show, he said, adding that whilst he believes that Blair is probably sincere in his stated commitment to the Palestinian peace process, this sincerity will come to naught given that Blair has always been and will continue to be subordinated to the aims of George Bush. Blair is finding out the limits of the powers of an ambassador. An ambassador is a man who goes abroad to lie for his country. Blair goes abroad to lie for someone else's country. But the tail never wags the dog. The dog always wags the tail. George Galloway, for those who are interested, will be speaking on Thursday the 29th of May at Willesden Green Library, 95 Willesden Road, 7:30 p.m. Other speakers include eyewitnesses from Palestine and Tubu Mukherjee, a human rights and asylum lawyer. The event is being organised by Brent Stop the War Coalition.
On Saturday, 17th May, hundreds of people gathered in the picturesque Cotswold town of Burford to commemorate the killing of three dissident Leveller soldiers by Cromwell's men on Thursday, 17th of May, 1649, one of the most shocking incidents of the Civil War. These men had the temerity to refuse to go and fight in Ireland. It was an open-air event, but despite an overcast sky and some heavy showers, it was an enjoyable occasion with a varied programme of activities. In the morning, we heard a number of speeches on educational topics, sitting in the peaceful gardens of Warwick Hall, followed by a lively debate. Speakers included Tim Brighouse, London Commissioner for Schools, Teresa Mumby, Ruskin College, Oxford, Kathleen McCann, Unison, and Chris Rowland, Professor of New Testament Studies, Oxford. At 12 noon, everybody lined up for the procession around the town. The cheerful crowd, waving banners and dressed in colourful costumes, including a large contingent of woodcraft folk, Labour, Green and Peace Movement groups, and the Sea Green Singers. Afterwards, there was a ceremony at the church gate with Chris Rowland making the dedication to the Levellers, followed by the laying of floral tributes in the churchyard. Afternoon activities included music singing from the Green Sea Singers and the Red Rose Band, and performances by the Cry Havoc Morris Dancers, Attila the Stockbroker, and David Robbins. Delicious food and refreshments were available all day, courtesy of Ox Veg.
And for the early risers among you, come to the Picket of Bechtel Conference in Hammersmith, West London, on Friday the 23rd of May from 7:30 onwards at the Novotel One Shortlands, nearest Tube, Hammersmith. Bechtel are an American construction company headed by Riley P. Bechtel, whose recent contracts include building automated warehouses for ExxonMobil's Singapore chemical plant, the Reliance of Oil Refinery, India, and the Mayakan Pipeline, Mexico. They were recently handed major grants by USAID to rebuild Iraqi infrastructure, i.e. Iraq's water sanitation services, school and hospital facilities, government buildings and rail systems, electric power stations and road networks. None of these are the supposedly military targets for smart bombs, although they were somehow obliterated. Their other projects in Iraq have not been exposed, but Bechtel have a vast experience with pipelines and oil refinery systems. The conference in Hammersmith is to give an overview of Bechtel's role and the status of the USAID humanitarian assistance efforts. This also involves the maximisation of Iraqi resources, i.e. oil. It is crucially important to picket this conference in order to expose the exploitation of the Iraqi people and the natural resources that belong to them. It's organised by the Stop the War Coalition.
October 15th, in the year 1969, I was standing on Madison Avenue. Several thousand people passed marching with candles in hand, chanting a mournful, mournful melody too. Then all the women, they were dressed up in black,
and white. Then I saw the tears coming down their cheeks. You know these people were within their constitutional rights. Peace and love, they're trying to see. They were singing Uncle Sam. End this useless war in Vietnam. Tell us what you're fighting for. We want you to bring back women from Vietnam. We say to have some consideration, Uncle Sam. Get women out of Vietnam. We want you to end the murders in Vietnam. We say to stop the killing in Vietnam, Uncle Sam. We want back the man. So I stopped a middle-aged woman to question her on the reason for this Vietnam moratorium. She said, I will explain everything to you, Lord Reiner. My husband was killed down there by a Viet Cong. But then she say I can't blame the Viet Cong for killing my man. The only person that I really got to blame is Uncle Sam. Because he have no right to be fighting in that country. And she intends to stop him from destroying humanity. Then she gone back on the Sam. End this useless war in Vietnam. Tell us what you're fighting for. We want you to bring back women from Vietnam. We say to have some consideration, Uncle Sam. Get women out of Vietnam. We want you to stop the murders in Vietnam. We say end the killing in Vietnam, Uncle Sam. We want back the man. While Uncle Sam was watching everything on TV inside, the radio broadcast the news so he will hear. But all this time he was only thinking of his political pride. While human blood is spilling over the air, so many thousands and thousands of lives have gone in vain. And not to mention the grief of their family. So the only way we could stop him from causing more pain is to bring back our men. We said to bring them back immediately. And they gone back on the time. End this useless war in Vietnam. Tell us what you're fighting for. We want you bring back women from Vietnam. We said to
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Your radical radio.
Hi again. The 29th of May is the second International Day of Action Against Depleted Uranium. Last year was great, with the actions happening truly all over the world. This year there has been quite a bit, although not enough, press attention over the use of depleted uranium in Iraq, and of course the outrage of the war, so hopefully we can make an even bigger event. It would be great if the groups and individuals working against depleted uranium could organise something in their area and would also and could advertise this day as wide as possible. CADU, the Campaign Against Depleted Uranium, has prepared flyers to advertise the day and have an updated list of places and companies connected with depleted uranium in Britain. CADU can try to find out targets for those interested in other countries as well. They have leaflets that are suitable for actions, which they will send out. For more information, visit www.cadu.org.uk. That's www.cadu.org.uk.
And coming up at the LSE, a conference on the BP Caspian Pipeline on 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, 28th of May, in the New Theatre at London School of Economics.
Species include Mayas gulalias, Caucasus, NGO Federation, Azerbaijan, Manano Kofladze, Green Alternatives, Georgia, Anders Lustgarten, Curtis Human Rights Project, a representative from BP, well, there'd have to be one, and Nicholas Hilliard from the Corner House.
BP plans to use UK taxpayers' money to help fund a highly controversial 1,750-kilometre oil pipeline through Turkey, Georgia and Azerbaijan. The pipeline threatens to cause huge social and environmental disruption and will fuel conflict in an unstable area.
In yet another unstable area. Sorry, I mean, it's just as,
yeah,
as they do in any country they go into, BP, Colombia, wherever.
The Baku Chan campaign is pleased to welcome two guests from Azerbaijan and Georgia coming to the UK as part of a European tour to raise awareness about the Baku Tbilisi Chan pipeline. Speakers will participate in a public meeting to discuss the impacts of the pipeline on their countries, to which we've also invited BP and AMEC, the two key UK firms involved in the project. Admission is free, but donations to the campaign will be gladly accepted. Please come along and bring your friends. The Great Pipeline Debate, New Theatre, LSE, Horton Street, London WC2. For more information, contact Kate Greary, Baku Chayan Campaign, 01865 200 550, or email baku@gn.apc.org.
And now news from up north, Scotland. An investigation was launched yesterday after protesters cut down areas of the last field of genetically modified crops in Scotland. Police in Fife said they were making inquiries into the damage to GM oilseed rape plants at west of Frierton Farm, Newport-on-Tay, near Dundee. No arrests have been made. Protesters said the plants had been chopped down overnight as part of an ongoing campaign in which another trial GM crop at Daviot, Aberdeenshire, was damaged last weekend. The action is the latest setback to Scotland's GM crop programme, after the Scottish Executive abandoned a farm trial at Munlochy on the Black Isle, following pressure from campaigners. In January, the Scottish Parliament Health and Community Care Committee published a report that cast doubt on the executive claims that there was no risk to human health linked to GM crops. The report, which was welcomed by protest groups such as the Munlochy Vigil, claimed that public health risk assessment procedures were flawed and voiced alarm over monitoring procedures.
A spokesman for the Fife protesters said that massive swathe of dark green now skived across the bright yellow slope of the flowering field is a shout of the people's defiance against the madness of GM farming. It expresses people's serious fears for the safety of public health, for consumers' right to choose GM-free food, and their fears of a long-term environmental catastrophe. This field of GM rape is now the last one standing in Scotland since Aberdeenshire saw its already damaged one at Davio finished off last weekend by nocturnal protesters. Both fields were attacked last November under the cloak of darkness with a giant symbolic cross scraped into the Fife field on St Andrew's night. The spokeswoman added, "A Mori poll last month showed the majority of Scottish people are still wary and opposed to GM food and crops. Well-attended local public meetings in Newport-on-Tay have shown even stronger opposition to the GM field-scale trials. Food pollution fears were inflamed by the publicised discovery last year that traces of GM DNA were found in the honey of a local beekeeper. Local organic farmers now fear for the future purity of their produce." A spokeswoman for Fife Constabulary said an investigation has been launched by police in Cooper into damage that has been caused to a field of GM crops. Friends of the Earth Scotland head of research, Dr. Dan Barlow, said it was unacceptable for individual Scottish communities to have to accept trials of GM crops. He said in his recently published partnership agreement, the Scottish Executive said that it wished to exercise the precautionary principle when it comes to the planting of GM crops. However, there is absolutely nothing precautionary in the way these farm-scale trials have been conducted so far. The open-air experimentation we have seen poses an unacceptable threat to the environment.
Instead of stopping to ask whether we even need GM crops, communities have nevertheless had trials foisted upon them. We hope no other communities ever have to be forced to put up with GM crops as they have in Fife, Aberdeenshire and the Highlands. Last June, four people were arrested following a protest against GM crops at the Fife farm. An estimated 250 people from across Scotland converged on Wester Ferryton farm in an event billed as a tea in the field protest.
Yay.
Involving barbecues, music, stalls and speeches. MST invade Monsanto, Brazil pops.
The government says it may be forced to allow farmers to grow genetically modified crops in Britain, even if the public does not want them. The Environment Minister Michael Meacher told the BBC a ban on GM crops would be illegal unless there is scientific proof they harm people or the environment. However, the latest polls show only 14% of people in Britain approve of GM food.
São Paulo, Brazil, militants of the landless peasant movement, MST, in Brazil, invaded Monsanto test farm last week in a bid to expel the US biotech giant and set up an organic farm on the site. The incursion by some 80 members from the MST and other landless groups onto an experimental farm in Ponta Grossa, Paraná, was aimed at stopping Monsanto from using farming methods unpopular in the state, according to the group. The government of Paraná says it doesn't want transgenic, and we producers don't want it, said MST leader Celio Rodrigues. Thus it is not right for Monsanto to have a technical centre here. Paraná is a large farm state in southern Brazil where Monsanto tests conventional and genetically modified corn and soybeans. Rodrigues said the objective of the occupation was to expel Monsanto from the state and convert the 43 hectares, 106-acre farm to organic production. The commercial planting of GM crops in Brazil has been banned since 1988, but a thriving black market and Monsanto's trademark Roundup Ready GM soy has developed in southern Brazil. The GM beans are thought to be smuggled in Argentina and Paraguay, where soy is widely planted. As much as 30% of Brazil's total soy output was estimated to be illegal GM. According to the Seed Producers Association, Abrastem, an illegal planting in the south, where the climate is favourable to the Argentine and Paraguayan varieties. It is much more widespread than in other regions. Monsanto said it has always condemned the illegal planting of GM soy in Brazil. Experimental GM planting, however, is legal, and much of the company's research is conducted jointly with the government crop research arm, Embrapa. Monsanto said test planting on its farms was in accordance with Brazilian law.
Monsanto is one of Brazil's biggest producers and sellers of conventional soy, corn and other crop seed stock, as well as farm chemicals and fertilizers. They can go back to the United States, Argentina or Canada, where transgenics are liberated, said Rodrigues. The Ponta Grossa farm was invaded on May the 9th by 800 militants who destroyed some labs and burnt down cornfields. Monsanto said it has asked authorities to prosecute those responsible for acts of violence against its staff, property and research and development in Brazil. We are big assets of biodiversity in Paraná, and Monsanto represents a threat, said Antonio Volochin from the Forum of Rural Workers in Paraná that participated in the occupation.
God bless America.
Take a little time out. I want everybody to kind of just think about what we just said. Kind of let it sink in. Just don't say a word. Just think about it. Think about it. Makes you wonder where we're going from here. You kind of like turn your head and look behind you. Makes you wonder where we just came from, too, don't it? Oh, Lord, we need help. We need help. We need help. Lord, somebody got to help us now.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4, bypassing the corporate media machine.
Okay, now as promised, the poetry of D.H. Rumsfeld. April the 2nd, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld is an accomplished man. Not only did he guide the war in Iraq, he has been a pilot, a congressman, an ambassador, a businessman, and a civil servant. But few people know that he is also a poet. Until now, the Secretary's poetry has found only a small and skeptical audience, the Pentagon Press Corps. And every day, Rumsfeld regales reporters with his jazzy, impromptu riffs. Few of them seem to appreciate it, but we should all be listening. Rumsfeld poetry is paradoxical. It uses playful language to address the most somber subjects, war, terrorism, mortality. Much of it is about indirection and evasion. He never faces his subjects head on, but weaves away, letting inversions and repetitions confuse and beguile. His work, with its dedication to the fractured rhythms of the plain-spoken vernacular, is reminiscent of William, Carlos Williams. Some readers may find that Rumsfeld's gift for offhand quotidian pronouncements is as entrancing as Frank O'Hara's. And so Slate has compiled a collection of Rumsfeld's poems, bringing them to a wider public for the first time. The poems that follow are the exact words of the Defense Secretary, as taken from the official transcripts on the Defense Department website. The unknown. As we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know, we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know, but there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. That was February the 12th, 2002, Department of Defense News Briefing. And now some global news.
Okay, globally.
Globally, this is straight from Indie Media St. Louis. Police attack activists and Indie Media in St. Louis. St. Louis, on May 16th, 17th, police initiated a severe crackdown on activists during the protests against pro-biotech World Agricultural Forum and concurrent Biodiversitation 7 conference. The BioDev 7 conference was addressing issues of environmental racism, world agriculture and biowarfare. It went on successfully despite heavy police presence. On May 16th, St. Louis police, backed by federal agents, raided the Community Arts and Media Project camp, home of the St. Louis IMC. The collective housing project Bolo Zone was also raided. Police arrested protesters and non-protesters alike without any provocation. The Secret Service illegally entered one person's home and later harassed his parents as well. St. Louis IMC is asking for support and for support for all those unjustly arrested. At the same time, police expressed a willful desire to harm peaceful protesters on a public online forum called St. Louis Coptuk SLC. One officer wrote, "It is true, we're going to be issued with new tasers before next weekend." The other replied, "I want that 220-volt model that blows the teeth out of their head just before they crap their pants." The post was soon removed from the web's forum, but CopTalk is still online.
And also in America, the police have illegally raided homes with tanks.
The victims of an egregiously false police raid and their attorneys announced an impending lawsuit against the Oregon State Police, Oregon National Guard, and others. In the pre-dawn of October the 17th, 2002, approximately 50 police officers from these agencies swarmed a residential neighborhood in Eugene, Oregon, USA, armed with automatic assault rifles and accompanied by a National Guard military light armored vehicle resembling a tank. Police claimed to be searching for a marijuana growing operation within three homes. Two couples were awakened by flashbang grenades hurled into their backyards of their homes, causing immense explosions which shook windows of surrounding buildings. Masked and armored SWAT police smashed down the doors of three residences. Residents were forced from their beds and forbidden to dress. One officer placed a black hood over the head of one woman, while police ransacked their homes for several hours. The police found no evidence of marijuana growing operation, but in a blatant attempt to justify this outrageous invasion, arrested and cited the individuals anyway, thereby exposing them to felony criminal charges and the possibility of having their homes forfeited under Oregon drug laws. All charges were later dismissed by the state. The raids caused extensive damage to their property. The police clearly violated the Fourth Amendment, which protects citizens from unreasonable search and false arrest. We intend to hold these police officers accountable, lest we allow them to further erode fundamental constitutional rights and put this community in jeopardy by serious physical injury at the hands of the law enforcement, said Anthony Ben Rosenfeld. Meanwhile, in Canada, a court ruling has decided that marijuana is now legal in Ontario. Justice Steve Rogan of the Ontario Superior Court has made a province-wide binding ruling that the prohibition of the possession of cannabis, marijuana, under the Canadian Controlled Drugs and Substances Act is not known to law due to the Parker ruling of the Ontario Court of Appeal of July 31st, 2000.
All back to Justice Steve Rogan's house then, I guess, after the show. Okay, meanwhile, meanwhile, outraged and frightened citizens are asking why military tanks and tactics are now being deployed against U.S. citizens in residential neighborhoods for purposes of search and seizure. One neighbor, a public school teacher, was walking to her car to go to work that morning. We opened the front door to find a swath of police officers, a huge armored personnel carrier, i.e. a tank, and several men in camouflage lurking around the shrubbery with assault rifles, said her husband. I just want to make sure I'm not going to be shot leaving the house, the teacher said, gesturing towards the men stationed with machine guns between her house and car. I haven't shot anyone in 2 weeks, responded the officer. Either the police just really screwed up, or they should have done far more investigation before entering a residential neighborhood in this manner, attorney Lauren Reagan said. Before you drive a tank to someone's house with 50 SWAT officers brandishing automatic assault weapons, you should be darn certain that you've got very dangerous pot growers in that house, and should be equally certain there is not a safer way to conduct such a raid. This and other recent SWAT incidents illustrate a total disregard for community safety where police are endangering the lives and safety of the neighborhood residents.
The police attempted to defend what the neighbors termed their militaristic raid in the 5th of the 12th edition 02 Register Guard article, claiming their approach with this raid was not much different except in magnitude than other drug raids they regularly conduct.
Lieutenant Lee Soming of the Insurgency Narcotics Task Force contended society at large wants us to do this, and the community at large wants us to do this. Contrary to Soming's assertion, the Whittaker Neighbourhood Association officially condemned the October raid. The Whittaker Community Council president stated, "We all need to learn about the encroachment of paramilitarised policing in the United States. We need to watch law enforcement, and we need to watch out for each other's civil rights. We need to work for a genuinely independent police review board. What is at stake is not only the very livability of our city, but also potentially the very life of every one of us and our children."
And now two news stories from Russia, one from Petersburg. The 300-year Jubilee celebrations, imminent visits by Bush and Blair, and the continuing threat from Chechen terrorists has led to a serious infringement of civil liberties in St. Petersburg, Russia's showcase city. Demonstrations, protests, pickets and rallies have been banned until the middle of June. Police ranks are reinforced by the specially trained, heavily armed OMON troops, the Russian SAS. Plans for the Jubilee celebration have meant that travel into and out of the city will become increasingly regulated, and there is talk of special passes being introduced, which would have to be shown to gain access to the city centre. Ordinary residents have continually expressed their displeasure with these measures, which mar their enjoyment of the celebration of that city's rich cultural and historical heritage. Recent protests, slogans and banners have referred to this as repression, and have complained at the constant sacrificing of residents' interests for the sake of image. Other slogans of recent weeks have included "No to a Putin personality cult," referring to the school books introduced in St. Petersburg as an educational experiment in which primary school kids read awe-drenched texts about the life and times of Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin. And now from Chechnya. Just over a year ago, journalist Andrei Babitsky wrote of the state censorship of journalists in Russia covering the second and ongoing Chechen war. He spoke of foreign journalists who had been banned from Russian territory for 5 years after exposing unlawful killings of civilians by Russian troops in clean-up operations. He spoke of Russian journalists intimidated and threatened by Russian military authorities in the region to such an extent that their lives were in danger. "Stay in the Russian military compound, speak to our guys and only our guys, and you'll be fine." That was the official Russian position. Now, a year on, the horror of war in the Caucasus continues and the censorship increases. Whereas there used to be regular patriotic coverage on all Russian TV stations showing hero of the day and military hardware technology of the day, now that is nowhere to be seen. A war, they suggest, that is not reported, is not a real war. The overworked volunteer staff of NGOs, organisations, are left to piece together information on what's really going on. Apart from the countless thousands of Russian conscripts that have vanished in this conflict, dozens of people disappear weekly from villages all over the region. Last week in Novaya Gazeta's regular column on the disappeared of Chechnya by Anna Politkovskaya, all the stories ran as follows. There was a knock at the door. It was night. Soldiers burst in, speaking perfect Russian, your language, and took him, whether it's a brother, father, uncle or son, away. We never saw him again. They wouldn't even let him put his shoes on. You won't need them where you're going, they said. There was a referendum held in Chechnya recently. The Russian government has declared its intention to compensate those who have lost relatives, and there is even talk of an amnesty on Chechen separatists. But all this takes place on the backdrop of continuing missions by special forces, continuing clean-up operations, and continuing infringement of the human rights of the Chechen population in Chechnya and throughout the Federation. Whether or not large-scale military engagement between Russian and Chechen forces continues, what we see in Chechnya is not peace.
I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug to kill River Phoenix, I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug to kill River Phoenix.
Moon was not the same. Heroes exploded, give us hope. River pushed back the envelope.
Drank the flag, drank the flag, drank the flag. The Moscow front. Drank the flag, drank the flag, drank the flag. The Moscow front.
Drank
In Palestine, as of course, there's been lots of stuff going on. And Saif, the Palestinian reporter known as the journalist by The Guardian, reports from Nablus that tanks are moving into the city from the east and west directions. From Rojib area, Amman Street is closed and two tanks are blocking the entrance to Mohafada government building. The city and Nablus has been separated with no movement possible between east and west. Soldiers are opening fire on anything that moves. Three people are reported to have been injured. Ramallah is under curfew today. Reports are that a family is being held hostage in Al Tarin area and that snipers have been positioned themselves at the windows of the home. Clashes in Balata refugee camp, Nablus. Sunday the 18th of May, clashes erupted between the Israeli occupation forces, the IOF, and at least 80 Palestinian youth in the Balata refugee camp near Nablus. The IOF entered Balata in an armoured personnel carrier and a jeep at 4:25 p.m. 1 hour later, Israeli soldiers entered and occupied a house of a Palestinian family on the outskirts of Balata. At 6 a.m., a heavily armoured Caterpillar and three additional jeeps arrived on the scene. Soon thereafter, clashes erupted between stone-throwing youth of Balata and the IOF, who responded by firing several warning shots. The clashes intensified during the morning, attracting more youths who joined in the stone-throwing. The IOF responded by detonating shock grenades, shooting at surrounding walls and firing towards the ground in an attempt to scatter the youth. At 9 a.m., the IOF left the occupied house and pulled back under the cover of a tank and a jeep, firing warning shots and shock grenades. At 10 a.m., the IOF withdrew and the area withdrew from the area and relocated to the outskirts of the camp. One tank, a bulldozer, and an armored personnel carrier continued their operations within a small field on the east side of the camp, where children engaged in further stone throwing. Two military jeeps maintained a roadblock near the original site of the clashes, where Palestinian citizens expressed concern regarding the detainment of at least one youth. Every man aged between 15 and 50 was ordered to leave their homes, rounded up and herded into the camp school. Men were then taken to various prisons and detained from 2 days to the present day and perhaps beyond. Mahmoud is still being held without charge in Ofar prison, Israel. Until his deportation a few days ago, there has been no reason given for the decision to deport him.
Gaza closure cripples UN relief work. Gaza, a complete closure of the Gaza Strip imposed by Israel on UN international staff, has crippled the Gaza operations of the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian refugees. UNRWA, the largest aid agency in the Middle East, in violation of the 1946 Convention on the Privileges and the Immunities of the UN Israeli's military, imposed a blockade on Gaza at 19:30 hours yesterday. UNRWA staff, urgently needed by the agency's operation in the West Bank and other parts of the region, have been trapped inside the strip, while staff normally resident in Gaza and needed on duty have been stranded in Israel. The UN's diplomatic pouch was also prevented from leaving Gaza this morning. The closure follows 2 weeks of delays, obstructions and interrogations of UN staff at the Erez crossing point into and out of Gaza. UN staff have been held for up to 7 hours at the border while security checks have been carried out. Some have been forced to submit to interviews by Israel's intelligence services to secure passage, while intrusive search procedures have been increased. None of UNRWA's 7,800 Palestinian staff in the Gaza Strip have been able to enter Israel on duty for the agency since October 2000.
Israel requested that UNRWA continue its operations in Gaza and the West Bank when the Palestinian territory was occupied by Israel in 1967. The agency and the government of Israel have a specific legal accord known as the 1967 Comey-Michael Moore Agreement, which sets out Israel's obligations. These include the requirement to permit international staff of the agency to move in, out and within Israel and the areas in question, and to permit the free movement of UNRWA vehicles into, within and out of Israel and the areas in question. UN IWA's protest to the Israeli Ministry of Affairs and Ministry of Defence have so far had no effect. Karen Koenig Abuzad, UNRWA's Deputy Commissioner General, said, "We understand Israeli security concerns, but the fact is that nothing has ever been found on a UNRWA international staff member to warrant the searches and procedures. I find it incomprehensible that all my staff are locked in or locked out of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli authorities must lift this closure to allow us to carry out our humanitarian mandate." The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees is a relief and human development agency providing education, healthcare, social services and emergency services to over 4 million refugees living in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, Jordan, Lebanon and the Syrian Republic. For more information, contact Paul McCann at UNRWA HQ Gaza on 972-086-777-526 or go to www.unrwa.org.
That's it from us. Yep. Just got one more story, though, bringing it all back home, you know. The other night I was cycling through Camden, and it was about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and next thing, if they weren't police vehicles, I would have thought there were people joyriding. Six police vehicles, like sirens blazing and top noise, and lights blazing, everything is flying past me in the direction of Kentish Town. I happened to be cycling past Kentish Town. I went up there. There were so many police vehicles up there and lots of police vans. What it was the 12th anniversary of Northern Somalia's independence. And so what it was coming out of the forum, we had a full black audience, which was made up of mothers, fathers, children, all kinds. But because they were all black, there was a sufficient need for so many police vehicles. It was a very beautiful, calm audience of people who were coming out, all quite happy. It was the Independence Day, and there was no violence, not even threat of it. And yet, the kids were saying to me, "Why are there so many police vehicles?" And I was going, "Well, is it because we're black?" I think so. Well, let's just leave it on that positive note.
We'll see you all next week. Please report your stories and your protests to the Indie Media website.
Which is www.uk.indiemedia.org.
And coming up next, we've got Ben with his rather excellent show. We don't know what it's going to be about, but we can't wait to find out.
Yay! Goodbye. Thank you! Bye! See you next week!
I don't wanna get drafted, I don't wanna go. I don't wanna get drafted. I don't wanna get drafted, I don't wanna go. I don't wanna get drafted. No, no, no. Get drafted. I don't want to get drafted. I don't want to get drafted. My, I don't want to get drafted. She don't want to go. My sister don't want to get drafted. My, I don't want to get drafted. She don't want to go.